Podcast vom Kunstraum Niederösterreich.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Im Kunstraum podcast series. My name is Friederike Sperling and I'm the artistic director at Kunstraum Niederösterreich. Today I'm virtually joined by the artist Alice Lingstedt, whose solo exhibition Flair de Mur is on view at the Kunstraum until the 9th of November still. And I know what many of you might wonder right now, but no, Flair de Mur is not some kind of satirical take for an exhibition title on Jules Le Brun's TikTok video, but has indeed been out there for almost a year now. So now that this is out of the way, dear Alice, how are you right now and where do I reach you?
I am now in Ålesund, or Sykkylven it's called. It's close to Ålesund. I usually refer to that city because it's the closest city at my parents'.
Yeah. Cool. So you're in Norway right now.
In Norway, exactly.
I'm also in my home office at the moment. And just want to thank you for making time in front of the screen. I took the liberty of not introducing you myself, as I would really like to do that together with you. And perhaps we could start by focusing on your artistic practice and the specific media you work in. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? And perhaps also, do you remember how this evolved specifically?
I think I started out with a very early interest in photography. And I always kind of thought I was doing art until I met some artists and started working documenting for artists, and then especially a performance artist who really triggered an interest for what's in front of the camera also, and what you cannot kind of capture with just a camera, and something that is live, something that is less tangible and more vulnerable in a way. So that was my introduction to performance.
And in other conversations, you also mentioned that actually language is a key medium or sort of entry point for you into your works. So I guess text and writing, perhaps you could elaborate on that a little bit.
I think the start of, or coming from the other question, the working with performance came also from the interest of nervousness and the lack of words in performative settings, and the feeling of a lack of your own voice. So kind of starting to make performance became like a way of controlling or building your own narrative, building empowerment in the voice.
Yeah, and then also, I think it was in 2021 when you graduated from Sandberg Institute.
Yeah.
And then also had a solo exhibition at the Flesaal in Middelburg, Soothing Pans, where you obviously then ventured into a more installational setting. So I guess coming from performance and considerations about liveness, you opted for something that is, I guess, then more steady, and perhaps opting for some proxies like sound. And could you elaborate a little bit on how that decision to make installations evolve?
I think after having made performances consequently for many, or like throughout my art studies and throughout and in between, and then the desire to create something that kind of could perform on its own without kind of having to be activated by a live body became very interesting, and also to not have to kind of be a subject in the same way on stage. Now of course I see myself going like in and out of this, and now of course I want to do the opposite. Now I want to make solo performances. But I think that was definitely an entry point to that, to be able to work with a time that I have control of in a different way than live.
So we touched upon language, but also technology and queerness and how these fields also interact, especially looking at digitality and digital platforms. Altogether, they seem to be recurring themes in your practice. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you arrived at them and how these themes also play out in your current works.
Yeah, yeah. So these three words are like queer, language and technology are both infrastructures that kind of shape the, that like directly shape the ways in which we both are represented and can be represented, and what spaces that are made possible for different kind of bodies or thoughts or exposure in general. I think it's really tied together in a way that is very unclear, in a way, because we live with technology that shapes our perception of the world, but the settings or the infrastructures that are within these this technology is just something we accept, or that's something that we have to accept, or something that we are not in control of, that is also like decided by really big companies. And even though things are changing, there's still quite a lot of infrastructural work to be done to kind of encompass more variety, I would say, or more, yeah, to encompass all bodies.
Yeah, yeah. Perhaps we could elaborate on that a little bit more later on. Because I guess this navigation, or the sort of way how social media, how digital platforms steer or sort of direct our desires and social relations, it's a fundamental core within your practice, I guess. But before we do so, I was thinking if you could perhaps also take us a little bit with you into your creative process. So the question of how you work specifically. And yeah, so in a previous conversation, you also mentioned that you keep, for instance, a huge file where you collect text fragments, and writing plays a huge role. So maybe you could, yeah, give us an insight into that process.
Yeah, yeah. So you're collecting text material is a very wide practice, I would say. So it's both like a diaristic practice in a way, and also collecting reflections or thoughts, but also language from these infrastructures that I engage with, or that we all engage with. And yeah, so I work with Flair de Mure, for instance. I worked with a text material as base for kind of a live editing process. So working with this text bank as a live material to kind of interact with and respond to in a live performance setting. So in that sense, it's quite immediate, spontaneous, and responsive to both how the modes of writing operate within the text, but also to how the feeling of performing in the second. So it's adding layers to the different fragments in this recording process. So I record in with sound, yeah, with the microphone, and with in kind of performative setting.
I was very curious about this way you're sort of moving in and out of the black box as well as the white cube context. So contexts that are more directed towards the indeed live moment in theatres, for instance, and then sort of settings that are more related to art exhibition contexts. Which advantages do you see in these respective settings, as in what do you appreciate about the live event, and what in an exhibition setting in which visitors can move relatively freely, like now in Flair de Mure?
Recently, I saw a performance in Oslo by Tora Midtbø, which was a vocal oriented choreography performance, with 6 or 7 performers. And this performance started with audience, or with the performers placed within the seats where the together with the audience. And the whole performance started in quite shallow, like a very not shallow, quite, it was quite dark, and the performance sound started as like humming from these performers, but it was impossible to see, to direct the sound to a specific place, because the performers were spread out and there were so many also. And that created a sort of interplay between the sounds coming from your own body and like the sound to be something that is kind of, or like someone else's, the feeling of an external sound coming from yourself in a way, which really is something that is produced within the meetings of bodies. I guess it could also be produced with technological factors, but it was really like a thing about sitting together and having a body next to someone else who has a body. And that's a potential of the kind of black box format, or like, I guess, live performance format, that is really powerful. And
I guess that also speaks to this idea of relationality, because especially guess sound has a sort of a scientifically proven resonance in bodies, so in the sort of liquid that we carry within our bodies. So the sound waves definitely play on our bodies, and in that sense sound might be some sort of interface or some sort of bridging medium in between bodies. But something that might also be very interesting in that performance that you just mentioned in relation to your work is also the notion of visibility, because also in Flair de Mur, and I suggest that we dive and describe it in just a bit. So considering your works that do have a stage character and installations like Flair de Mur, where your body is sort of present through sound and responsive light, hence play with certain strategies of camouflage, I guess. Also, is your decision to be present and visible a conscious one, or i.e. when does it become necessary for you to be visible in your work? When do you decide to opt or to opt for this life moment? When do you prefer to use sound and light, for instance, as media?
I think our expectations to voice that is heard from a speaker is something different to a voice that is created by a visceral body. And being visible also creates a potential of empathy in a way, or transmission. And I think being bodies with bodies like activate a different way of listening, both inwards and outwards, than with true speakers. I also get sort of nervous to answer, which is also like a potential an interesting reaction in performance that I'm really interested in, how that kind of how a live performance and how bodies in space together creates empathy, like the potential for empathy, but also also for this kind of nervous situation that you kind of, if you're an audience in a performative setting, there you have a sort of responsibility also for the live situation. You're kind of your body is also hosting the performance. That interplay is quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think in a previous conversation you called it holding a space when you're sort of present in the life moment, and how this then influences your voice.
Holding time in a way, that you're kind of holding that the moment is live and that it matters in a way, and that it's something that happens there and then. It's quite focused in a way. Otherwise, we are used to being able to, re-record or rewrite or edit our kind of instances of representation. But in live, of course, you can also do that in live performances. But it's something very immediate that I'm quite interested in.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the different contexts of liveness and then more installational works also bring with them different forms of attention and visitors. And I would be actually thrilled to discuss that more in detail in relation to Flair de Mur. But before we do that, let's focus perhaps on the installation in more detail. Could you start out by briefly describing what people see and sense in your show at the Kunstraum? Or like, what's the atmosphere like in the space?
So as you previously mentioned, it's a very... the lights are quite dim, I would say. It's quite, it's a bit of a lurky vibe where you enter and try to find your way within. The space is divided into four kind of zones or that you have to move around to experience.
Yeah, and... Perhaps we could immediately jump into the different components of the installation. Yeah. So you mentioned these four areas. Then there are these five different light sculptures. Perhaps we could start out by looking at them more specifically. Perhaps you could describe the light sculptures a bit and how their iconography, so their specific appearance, relates to your exhibition title, Flair de Mur.
The sculptures are referencing the flower, the lily of the valley, which is this flower that is heavily used in Christianity as a symbol of absolute purity. And the flower itself is a very demure, has a very demure shape. It's kind of like that bowing down towards you in a submissive way. It's always growing in the shades of other trees and plants, so it's quite demure in that way as well. But it has a very sturdy, it's a bulb flower, and it has a very sturdy composition. Making these sculptures and placing them around the space as sort of kind of
I was going to say silent witnesses, but they're definitely not silent.
But they could be like guiding stars or like fairies around the space that speak to you or speak to each other.
Yeah, but also the notion of silent witnesses also speaks to this duality that you seem to be interested in. So because the lily of the valley is not only if you look into botany, it has a very different character trait within itself. So, in fact, it is very toxic. And perhaps you could tell us a little bit how you inscribe this potential toxicity also within the shape of the sculptures and perhaps also the blossoms that you 3D printed.
I guess the flower in itself, the lily of the valley, has quite a sharp end. But when you make this sharp, like the stem of the sculpture is made from steel, and it has a very sharp, threatening kind of end. And sometimes one of the sculptures is like clearly pointing at you when you enter the space in a bit of a threatening way. And I guess also the size of the sculptures kind of make them into some kind of threat, or like they are bodily confronting in a way.
Mm-hmm, because they are life size, no? Yeah.
They're life size. Mm.
But you also often refer to these sculptures as tech buddies. Could you perhaps explain what this precisely entails for you?
Yeah, so I use the term technical buddies for anything I work with as an installation and performance mean, in a way. So any kind of speaker or cable or a microphone that is visible on stage or in an exhibition becomes a sort of a performer, and is something that I always try to treat as a performer, because different means of technology has different expectations of how they perform, in a way. And in that way, also the flowers, like, this is my first time making like sculptures, but in that way they also become technological bodies that perform, although the expectations to these bodies are a bit more unclear, perhaps.
Yeah, that is also interesting because you just mentioned also technology and language to be infrastructures that we simply seem to be accepting all the time, while in fact these infrastructures significantly steer or sort of have an impact on our relations, on our desires and on our lives. And so, yeah, I guess then it makes total sense to actually also presence these technologies, these infrastructural settings, cables and so on, as in fact factors or sort of actors, and name them in a way, at least visually. The sound score, perhaps we haven't mentioned that yet, but there is a sound score. So in fact there are 5 channels in total, 6 speakers. Yeah. Can you describe as to why you approach the sound like a sort of cacophony with different narratives?
So there's 5 sculptures and also 5 soundtracks or sound channels, and these channels represents the voice of each flower, and the whole score of 22.5, I think it is, or 21.5.
Mm-hmm.
I should know.
20, let's say 20 minutes. Round about 20 minutes.
That one, interplay in a sort of choreography of sound distributed in space, and they also they interchange between speaking individually and also coming together as a little choir, but also like a call and response or like a conversation in space, I would say.
So we have all this space. And now what do we do? So, and now we have all this space. And what do we do?
Ask me. And I told my aunt.
What about my fictions? What about my fictions? Needs higher grenades.
Within the very sound you created on these five channels, you also include very guttural, very visceral sounds like yawning, smacking, and sighing. Would you say this is, and it's a very suggestive question, but is this a sort of attempt to also make, or to sort of inscribe some sort of liveness, or to sort of suggest some sort of presence of live actors within the space?
I think the materiality of the voice is something that I'm interested in capturing a big range from, and within this installation, the sound is translated into light, so each flower is lighting up, representing the sound and the audio curve. So in a way, in a way that also came out to be quite a lot more sensitive than I imagined in the first place, which I'm very happy about. So in that, and in seeing like light as a representation for sound also gets the, or like these very slight or small sounds or guttural sounds, or they become visible in space, and the increments of these little sounds become visible in a way. Mm-hmm. I guess it makes it quite a lot more bodily of an experience when you have this correlation between the light and sound, and their kind of role as performers are also made more apparent.
Mm-hmm. It's quite hard to identify a voice. One barely identifies your voice in these scores due to different forms of distortions, glitches, fragmentations, and so on. Why is that?
I think different audio effects or different... I am seeking to create different modes in between different characters, or even like temporary, even if they're like temporary characters that just arise for a couple of seconds, or the fact that even like one vocal track can respond to itself and change its kind of materiality through an effect or through technical settings, that becomes sort of like a performative mean in a way. Mm-hmm. So the sound score is consists, as you said, from different audio like glitches. Also, that's something that creates perhaps a suggestion of a more technical voice, or something that's processed through a technical environment. and that it becomes like that this in combined with the kind of distortions of the voice from a visceral body becomes a kind of a conversation between technology and the visceral body.
So speaking of glitches, something that also speaks to this is perhaps the way in which light and sound are coordinated by a sort of algorithm, if you will, that you especially programmed for this show. And in a way, what I like to, how I like to look at it is that you kind of appropriate the algorithmic navigation of bodies, desires, and social relations in our everyday life in a way by really creating a sort of choreography out of this interplay of sound and light. So you have these psst sounds seducing people into different corners. Then you have something like a main stage. And there's a constant dependency of what's visible and what's not visible that you seem to have in your hands. But then apparently also seem to be interested in disruptions. So could you elaborate a little bit on this?
I had my phone stolen, and living without the phone is also living without this kind of parasite in your pocket, or like parasite. I've been thinking about this interaction with the phone as a parasite, something that's kind of stuck on your body and that is becoming like collecting you even more than you are collecting it, in a way. And you are and how you always look for these kind of signals, how you always look for light signals or vibrations, like slight vibrations or like just a little flash from the screen or a flash from, like, some people use flashlights to kind of emphasize like that someone is calling, which I find completely crazy. But then you so navigating within that sensitivity is also something that this exhibition is kind of, or like the exhibition is putting up a similar kind of dynamic, where you have to, you place your body within an environment you have to respond to sounds, or you do respond to light, because the light has meaning and the sound has meaning, and you're kind of trying to navigate yourself within this murmur or cacophony of voices, which I guess is also a bit like how we navigate in our daily lives.
Yeah, and in a way, given that these voices are really unidentifiable in a way, and also are sort of sliding into glitches every now and then, they become unreliable in a way. So you seem to be deliberately also throwing visitors back on their own repertoire of senses and their own way of navigating that space, which is, as we may remind people, indeed rather dark. But speaking of visitors, I think where I feel that the visitor is a further crucial part of the installation itself. It's like a component of the entire installation, especially if you're considering the interplay between sound and light constituting a sort of choreography. What role did the potential perception and experience of the show play while you actually conceived the installation, or even when you live edited, perhaps?
So in the making of the space or the installation, the movement around the space was a very crucial factor, that the fact that you can both move in a way and be both visible and invisible. And this kind of center stage of the installation is based around this round wall, which has a door in it, which at many times when, or at many times, so if there is more audiences in the space, you will see that people are peeking through this little door and then sometimes even entering, and then you kind of enter what the other audiences perceive as the stage area. Walking onto this kind of center stage, becoming like a performer without being affected so much, I would say, or perhaps that's just the people I saw. But I was quite happy to see that people would just walk through this this setting, because then you also, yeah, you, there is like direct link created between you and, yeah, between the different bodies of audiences, and there is, yeah, which creates like a different, yeah, like different layers of audiences as well, and definitely makes you into a performer.
Yeah, what I find particularly fascinating about Fleur de Mur is how it demands from visitors a different form of attention, also. So building on this sort of dynamic of seeing and being seen. Usually visitors would enter the Kunstraum with a, what Claire Bishop refers to as exhibition time mindset. And then they're confronted with a setting that seems to have a dramaturgy, different features like sound and light that demand a longer attention span. Unlike with video works, for instance, that you could potentially also rewatch elsewhere, ultimately demanding a performance time mindset. Is this conflation of different forms of tension something that interests you? So deliberately playing and corrupting the sort of black box and white cube scenario?
I think that's definitely something that happened. Because once you're listening to one of these narratives or one of these audio scores, you're kind of being taken away by another one that is happening in the back, and you're kind, it's hard to know how long to sit where, in a way. So you cannot really sit down and see the or experience the whole thing from one perspective. I think you're urged to move around by the setting itself and by the composition of the audio score. I think that's something that's quite kind of also demands you to have a reaction, and that's not something that these formats normally do, in a way. And that also makes you navigate the space and also meet other, like you create this kind of micro performances when you enter this like little, like there's a little dark room space, and you enter through these silly little doors, if I can say. and then you meet someone from the other side, and then you're made aware of your own body. I think that's always like coming to a performance, the disorienting moment of performing, or the nervous moment of performing, has always been an interest and something that I've always been unpacking in any format I worked with, and that's still something I find, or like the kind of the yeah, nervous tensions and things that happen in very rapid time, like quick time frames that are intangible and that you cannot really explain, are of course of interest, because you lack language and you want to try and understand things that don't really have any specific language. Or try and find a way to relate to it, at least.
Something that then also refers back to the word flair in the exhibition title, because something that's flaring is also some, in a way, in between space. I guess flaring is also this also denotes some liminality, if you will. And then also going back to algorithms and sort of digital infrastructures where these in-between spaces are unthinkable because algorithms are organized in binary systems. I think that's, it's amazing how this traverses your entire practice and the themes that you're interested in. For our further literature section of the show, you've brought three different book recommendations. Could you perhaps briefly tell us which are they and how were they important for you and the piece?
So the book Auto Theory as Feminist Practice by Lauren Fournier, a book I stumbled upon as I was doing my master's at Sandberg Institute in Amsterdam. And getting these, just like being made aware of how this kind of format of auto theory worked was really powerful in my kind of shaping my own voice in writing, and also being able to think of theory as something that doesn't have to kind of be one coherent piece of writing, but that is something that is kind of entailed in micro narratives from our lives and experiences, that and that is something very personal and at times private as well. That was something that's really was eye-opening in my the shaping of how I write. And then you also have The Freezer Door by Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, which is and there's also Reverse Cowgirl by Mackenzie Work, and both of these books are kind of very first-hand autobiographies or auto-theory books that are shaped from the, or where the authors are telling personal stories and relating very personal stories to bigger contexts and theory, which have been really, really amazing to read.
Thank you so much, Alice. To wrap up this conversation, let's have something of an outlook, perhaps. Would you mind sharing what you're working on next?
Right now I'm within I would say something in between working on applications and working on a solo performance. So I'm going to make a solo performance format, which is something that I haven't done for, I think, 4 or 5 years now. It's been since I've solo performed, and which is something that I'm quite excited about coming back to. And also I'm working on a group performance with several performers together with Jenny Bergsli and other things.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, we wish you great luck and success and fun with all these projects, and we all miss you very much here in Vienna. And
I miss you too.
Again, thank you so much for your time. And
thank you so much for having me. That was sweet.
Talk soon.
Talk soon.